Hey, denk dran, dass auch dein Immunsystem Hunger hat. Und probier's mal mit den Gesundheitszielen zur Ernährung in der App Auka Navida. Hol dir Tipps, Rezepte und Challenges für dein gesünderes Ich. Jetzt die App Auka Navida downloaden und loslegen. Auka Plus. Aus Liebe zur Gesundheit.
Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer günstig und natürlich mit dem Aldi-Tiefpreisversprechen. Zum Beispiel knackiges Gemüse, saftiges Obst, frische Backwaren. Kurz gesagt, mehr Frische für alle. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote zum Tiefpreis in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Well, this is Dr. Grande. Today I will analyze the case of David Scotts. He is the topic of an HBO documentary titled The Mortician. First, I'll look at the background of this case, including the timeline of the crimes, then offer my analysis. David Wayne Scotts was born on March 27, 1956, in Santa Barbara, California. He was raised by his father, Jerry, and his mother, Lori Ann, along with one brother named Gary. In the 1980s, David's parents took over a business called Lamb Funeral Home, which was located in Pasadena, California. The business was established in 1929 by a man named Charles Lamb. His son, Lawrence Lamb, took over in the 1950s. David's mother, Lori Ann, was Lawrence's daughter, which is how she and her husband, Jerry, ended up with the business. David's job with the company was to manage the cremation services. The business had a small crematorium with two ovens. Each oven was capable of cremating one body every 2 hours. In 1981, the last year the business was under the control of Lawrence Lamb, they cremated 194 bodies. David took over in 1982 and had bold plans to increase this number dramatically. He realized that he could boost the number of cremations by placing more than one body in an oven at a time. This was illegal and unethical. It would mix the remains of multiple people together. In the documentary, David commented on his scheme to increase efficiency, saying, quote, "I could cremate one guy in 2 hours, or you could put 10 of them in there and take 2.5 hours. So what would be the difference? There is none," unquote. In 1982, David and his employees cremated 1,675 bodies. In 1983, this figure increased to 3,487. It moved up to 4,350 in 1984 and 8,173 in 1985. In order to keep up with the incredible volume, the employees would have competitions to see how many bodies they could put in an oven at one time. Some employees reported they were able to get 30 bodies inside. This involved breaking bones in order to make the bodies fit. David became well known in the funeral home community for his amazing ability to cremate large numbers of bodies. This is not something he concealed by any measure. He even drove a Corvette bearing the license plate, "I burn for you." On November 23, 1986, the crematorium was destroyed by fire after an employee started the ovens, stepped out to use drugs, and fell asleep. Despite this setback, David kept accepting bodies for cremation. He moved his operations to a ceramics factory in Hesperia, California, about 71 miles to the east. There he could fit up to 200 bodies in an oven at one time. People who lived in the area started reporting strange smoke and flames coming from the factory. On January 20, 1987, the police and other officials paid a visit to the facility. They found a large number of bodies waiting to be cremated and an oven full of partially burned human remains. As the investigation continued, other criminal behavior was uncovered. For example, David had been harvesting body parts and stealing gold out of teeth. David's parents also found themselves in trouble for various offenses. For example, his mother, Lori Ann, had collected prepayments for funeral services, but never reported the accounts. She ended up collecting $90,000 in interest that did not belong to her. Ultimately, David's parents were convicted of a few charges and sentenced to 3 years and 8 months in prison. David ended up taking a plea deal to resolve the charges that he faced. On August 30, 1989, he pleaded guilty to 21 counts, including removal of body parts, mutilation of human remains, multiple cremations, commingling human remains, assault, and robbery. He received a 5-year prison sentence, not quite the eternal rest some might have hoped for. David only served 2.5 years. However, he had more legal problems. He had also been accused of murder and conspiracy to commit murder. These were two separate cases. The murder charge stemmed from the death of a competitor named Tim Waters, who died on April 8, 1985. The police believe that David killed him using oleander. The conspiracy to commit murder charge involved a case where David allegedly hired someone to kill a potential buyer of a rival crematorium in 1986. This man was named Eli Estefan. The plan was to kill Eli by planting a bomb in his car. In April 1991, the murder charge was dropped. Again, that case was based on the death of Tim Waters. An autopsy revealed that there was no oleander in Tim's system. David was still facing the conspiracy to commit murder charge, but he was released on his own recognizance in late 1991. By this time, his parents were also out of prison. The family moved to Bullhead City, Arizona, where David worked as a bus driver. He was arrested after printing and selling fake bus passes. After pleading guilty, he was sentenced to 5 years in prison. As I mentioned, David was still facing a conspiracy to commit murder charge in the state of California. He was transferred to jail in that state to face that charge. Back in 1989, when David agreed to the original plea bargain, the conspiracy to commit murder charge was under appeal. The judge said that if David someday faced that charge, his sentence would be probation for life. The decision may have been based on the fact that David attempted to pull out of the conspiracy. He had changed his mind about committing the murder. The state was very upset with this plea deal, feeling as though it was way too lenient. They argued that the judge did not have the authority to include the charge in the plea bargain because it was under appeal. Ultimately, the state prevailed, and David's plea bargain was revoked. Later, David argued that he accepted the plea bargain in good faith. Therefore, the state should honor it. Essentially, what the judge had the authority to do or not do was not David's problem. The Ninth Circuit agreed, and David was allowed to enter a new plea bargain. In 1997, he pleaded guilty to conspiracy to commit murder and was sentenced to lifetime probation. David was given a new plea bargain at the same low price. In 2002, David ended up back in court for a probation violation. The judge told him, quote, "If you come back before me on a violation of probation, I will sentence you to life in prison," unquote. One would think that a warning like this would have an impact on David's behavior, but it did not. In 2012, David was arrested after trying to sell a rifle at a pawn shop in Montana. As a convicted felon, he was not allowed to own firearms. He was sentenced to 5 years of probation in Montana, but that wasn't the worst problem he was facing. The state of California accused him of violating his lifelong probation. In 2013, David Sconce pleaded guilty to violating probation and was sentenced to 25 years to life in prison. 10 years later, in 2023, David Sconce was released from prison. Now moving to my analysis. Here are my thoughts on a few areas that stood out to me in this case. Item number one. David Sconce participated in the documentary The Mortician. He vigorously defended how he commingled the ashes of cremated bodies. For instance, David said, quote, "I don't put any value on anybody after they're gone and dead, as they shouldn't when I'm gone and dead. That's not a person anymore," unquote. At times during the documentary, he expressed some remorse for a few of his offenses, but not the commingling. He tried to make the case that it was logical and efficient, therefore no one should be upset by it. When confronted with how it could have made loved ones upset, David did not appear to understand that concept at all. He had no empathy for his victims and no appreciation that other people might have different values than he did. Item number two. One man who was interviewed said that David had an excuse for everything. This was an astute observation. There was a theme in the documentary where David explained away his bad behavior. He blamed everybody but himself, including conspirators, his family members, and competitors. Feeling as though he had been dealt with too harshly, David said, "How long do I have to be punished?" and complained about how he could not go back in time and change things. He was ready to move on with his life. Item number three, David complained about being abandoned by his parents. His father, Jerry, died in 2019, and his mother, Lorianne, doesn't talk to him anymore. He blamed them for getting him into the mortuary business, as if that caused his problems, but also said that a football injury started a chain reaction, which led to his misfortune. If only that injury never occurred, who knows what greatness David could have obtained. There is the sense that David wants to be a hero, a villain, a victim, and a tough guy, all at the same time. He is aimless to a degree and desperate for attention. Item number 4. When talking about how he was sentenced to 25 years to life in prison for violating probation, David acted as if the authorities in California were out to get him, like someone had a grudge against him, or maybe there was some type of conspiracy. This is a particularly confusing assertion, considering how, in 2002, a judge promised David life in prison if he violated probation again. David, of course, did violate probation again. This is yet another example of David trying to deflect blame and make himself seem important, like these officials in California were obsessed with him. He was so special, they simply could not resist targeting him in some way. Item number 5. At the very end of the documentary, there was a peculiar interaction where David was talking about being robbed at gunpoint at a cemetery. He said, "All I can say is, do you think I found that guy?" David then said, quote, "It's one of the things I can't talk about. The other thing I'll tell you about, too, but you can't talk about that either. Really, there's 3 of them altogether," unquote. When the producer said he did not want the information, David said, quote, "It's never going to come back. It's never going to come back. Can't come back," unquote. It appears as though David was getting ready to admit to some sort of homicide. This is a risky strategy, but David cannot help bragging. He wants to appear dangerous. He is essentially saying that I have a secret. I am a man of intrigue and mystery. There's a sense that David simply cannot resist getting himself in trouble. Here he was, just released from prison, and he's already trying to confess to killing somebody, or maybe to killing 3 people. Again, he said, there's 3 of them altogether. Item number 6, what do I think happened in this case? This is just a theory, my opinion. David Sconce was self-centered, impulsive, irresponsible, immature, reckless, sensation-seeking, manipulative, deceptive, cynical, opportunistic, greedy, lazy, vindictive, petty, sadistic, arrogant, condescending, pretentious, attention-seeking, had a sense of entitlement, and was exceedingly creepy. The documentary spent a lot of time on how David may have killed Tim Waters, almost like he beat the system. However, there is no mystery as to David's potential to commit homicide. He pleaded guilty to conspiring to kill Ellie Estefan. When looking at David's entire criminal history, he should have been imprisoned for life. Despite being fortunate enough to be released, David couldn't help himself when he was approached to participate in the documentary about his crimes. He was all too happy to dig his own grave. David alluded to the idea that he committed more serious offenses for which he escaped responsibility, like he was trying to talk himself back into prison. There's a sense that David wants to be thought of as a master criminal who had this amazing adventure, but his behavior demonstrates that he is a menace to society and his own worst enemy. As far as the lesson learned in this case, in a peculiar way, it may come from David Sconce himself. His central argument was that a funeral home should be treated like a business. From his perspective, that meant selling body parts, stealing gold, commingling ashes, and committing other offenses. But there are other non-criminal ways to look at this. David was able to get away with his offenses, in part, because when people get involved with funeral homes, they usually don't ask too many questions. The catalyst for involvement with a funeral home is the death of a loved one, which means that people are understandably feeling a lot of emotions, like grief. It doesn't feel like the right time to scrutinize the funeral home business or to negotiate a better price for any of the services. People don't want to seem pushy or invasive. They are fine with the idea of the funeral home worker simply performing their work in peace. Asking a lot of questions may even feel like betraying the person who died. Like, why would somebody be thinking about money instead of thinking about the loved one? The timing just makes it seem insensitive. Comparison shopping isn't the priority. David understood this. He realized that the funeral business presents a great opportunity to take advantage of people. In this reduced scrutiny environment, criminals like him could make a lot of money. There are many purchases that people make which don't involve much in the way of emotion. In these instances, consumers get a better deal because the competition is strictly based on price. For example, not too many people get emotionally attached to a car insurance policy. You never hear someone say, "Well, I know I pay more with this particular insurance company, but me and that policy, well, we've been through a lot together. I would hate to give it up." It would just feel like a betrayal. The funeral home business is much different. These businesses don't have to compete purely on price because people are not shopping around. Moving back to the lesson learned, I think the lesson here is that even though it seems callous and maybe even inappropriate, a consumer must always be on guard, even during the most emotionally charged times. The funeral business, for all its solemn dignity, is still a business. David was right about that part. Whenever a consumer is not paying attention to money, criminals certainly will be. Those are my thoughts in the case of David Sconce. Thank you so much for watching. I'll talk to you soon. Just a reminder that I have over 300 pre-release videos on my Patreon account. The videos that I place there are of the same quality as the videos I make public. When I put a video in pre-release status, it usually stays there for several months, if not a year. I will put the link to Patreon in the description for this video.